A couple of hours after midnight, there I was at the Clutch Mole, watching Speed's clerk settle up with the skipper of a neat little smack, or yawl, or whatever you call them, while its crew of Antonios chattered and loafed on the hatches. Even in those days, Trieste was more Italian than Austrian. And here came Speed, in haste across the deserted plaza from the station, with a squad of Royal Marines from his embassy, wheeling the goods on a handcart. Scores of little strongboxes with the locks sealed with the royal arms. There were four of the bootnecks under a sergeant with a jaw like a pike, all very trim, with their Sniders slung. Speed's dollars would be safe from sea pirates and land banditti with this lot on hand. It may have been my jest about Monty, or his natural fear at seeing his precious cargo pass out of his ken, but now that the die was cast, Speed had a fit of the doubtfuls. Earlier he'd been begging me to come to his rescue, but now he was chewing his lip as they swung the boxes down to the deck, with the eye ties jabbering and the sergeant giving him Billingsgate, while I took an easy cheroot at the rail, trying my Italian pigeon on the skipper. "This ain't a joke, Flash," says Speed. "It's bloody serious. You're carrying my career along with those dollars. My good name, damn it." As if he had one. "Jesus, if anything should go wrong, you will take care, old chap, won't you? I mean, you'll do nothing wild, you know, like... He broke off, not caring to say, like buggering off to Pago-Pago with the loot. Instead, he concluded glumly, "'Tain't insured, you know, not a penny of it." I assured him that his specie would reach Napier safely in less than 4 weeks, but he still looked blue, and none too eager to hand over the embassy passport requesting and requiring HM servants, civil and military, to speed me on my way, and a letter for Napier asking him to give me a warrant and funds for my passage home. I shook hands briskly before he could change his mind, and as we shoved off and the skipper spun the wheel and his crew dragged the sail aloft, damned if he wasn't here again, running along the mole, waving and hollering, "I say, Flash, I forgot to ask you for a receipt." I told him to forge my signature, if it would make him sleep sounder, and his bleating faded on the warm night air as we stood out from the mole, the little vessel heeling over suddenly as the wind cracked in her sail. The skipper bawled commands as the hands scampered barefoot to tail onto the lines, and I looked back at the great, brightly lit crescent of the Trieste waterfront, and felt a mighty relief, thinking, "Well, Flashy, my boy, there's another town you're glad to say goodbye to on short acquaintance, and here's to a jolly holiday cruise to a new horizon and an old friend. And then, hey, for a swift passage home and Elspeth waiting." Strange. Little Gertrude was fading from memory already. But I found myself reflecting that, thanks to my tuition, her princeling husband would be either delighted or scandalized on his wedding night. Possibly both, the lucky fellow. You gather from this that I was in a tranquil, optimistic mood as I set off on my Abyssinian odyssey. Ass that I was. You'd have thought, after all I'd seen and suffered in my time, that I'd have remembered all the occasions when I'd set off carefree and unsuspecting along some seemingly primrose path, only to go headfirst into the pit of damnation at t'other end. But you never can tell. I couldn't foresee, as I stood content in the bow, watching the green fire foaming up from the forefoot, feeling the soft Adriatic breeze on my face, hearing the oaths and laughter of the jollies and the strangled wailing of some frenzied tenor in the crew, I couldn't foresee the screaming charge of long-haired warriors swinging their hideous sickle blades against the Sikh bayonets, or the huge mound of rotting corpses under the precipice at Islamgi, or the ghastly forest of crucifixes at Gondar, or feel the agonizing bite of steel bars against my body as I swung caged in the freezing gale above a yawning void, or imagine the ghastly transformation of an urbane, cultivated monarch into a murderous tyrant shrieking with hysterical glee as he slashed and hacked at his bound victims. No, I foresaw none of those horrors, or that amazing unknown country, Prester John's fabled land of inaccessible mountain barriers and bottomless chasms, and wild, war-loving, beautiful folk, into which Napier was to lead such an expedition as had not been seen since Cortez and Pizarro, so Henty says, through impossible hazards and hopeless odds.